want to get your fingers on the type buttons, but I want you to guess whether you think this item was a level 1, which is the lowest level, like the Coke things, through to level 5, which is the sort of more sophisticated algebra. But what they had to do this time was work out really how long it was between the digital time on the parking ticket and the analog clock. So do you think that's a level 1 or a level 2? And level 1 and level 2 we consider not to be adequate for, you know, everyday life and work and all of that. Level 3 sort of in the middle, and 4 and 5 then your skills are quite high. So does anybody want to have a guess at whether this is a 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5? I'll turn myself off so you can also talk your answers too. Okay, so we've got some 2s and 3s. Not bad. It says it was a level 3. So when we come to look at the results, remember that this is the sort of level 3 numeracy item. I guess the other thing to say while we're looking at the numeracy items is that we try to develop some items whereby maybe people's literacy, reading skills may not get in the way. So if people saw that and their English skills maybe weren't crash hot, they still might be able to work out what we were asking just by looking at the visuals. Okay, here's another one, which is rolling 2 6-sided dice at the same time. What's the chance you will roll 2 6s? Do you want to go guessing your levels this time? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5? Sorry, there's no prizes. Come on, more guesses, come on. Alright, so we're guessing 4s and 5s pretty good again. That was actually a level 4. Again, they could write the answer as a decimal or as a, you know, 1 chance in 36, 1 over 36. We were tried to score them so that, you know, people didn't have to get necessarily a specific correct mathematical answer. Obviously it was correct, but okay. There were 2 items related to some supermarket tags from when you buy small goods and stuff like that. So this question was, if you buy a quarter of a kilogram of brie, how much would you pay? People want to guess 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5. Sorry, I nearly gave it away, so it's not 5. Okay, 1, 2, 3, or 4. Okay, we've got a bit of range there, haven't we? We've got some 2s, 3s, and 4s. Okay, that was a 3 as well. So that's, sure you've got to identify the tag, find which one was the brie. The price per kilogram was 9.80, and then you can divide that by 4. So, and you've got to know what a quarter is. So, but that's level 3 again, which is a skill we're saying people need today. If you were at level 2, you don't have that sort of skill. We always, when we first started working on this, we actually wanted to give people a physical can and actually get them to do some work on it, but of course you're not allowed to do that in a big international survey. So there's a picture of a sort of a container, and what they had to do was draw in that container where they thought 1/3 was on the container, and they had a little bit of a range whereby the correct answer, so people are guessing where their third are. Oh, very good, I'm most impressed. So now you've got to tell me whether you think it's a level 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. God, you're a very numerate bunch. So some 2s, some 3s. And again, if you think of mixing chemicals at home or bleach or in the workplace, it's a, you'd hope people might have a bit of a clue where a third was compared to a quarter and a half, like you guys. Alright, so we got some 2s and 3s, so again it's a number 3, it's a level 3 item, that one. Okay, back to the supermarket tags. Which of these items was packed first? So it's just comparing the dates. Any guesses? We're all in agreement. Twos, and that agrees with the... Well, it's actually on the borderline between one and two, so... So, you know, telling the dates on that was not that as difficult as the others. And the last one, where they had to use a little scale drawing, a conversion chart, and actually convert from the 12 degrees Celsius across to Fahrenheit. And I'll give you the answer on that one. That's another level 3 item. So again, I guess what I was trying to do there was give you a bit of a feel for what the levels were about. And I think if you think of the NRS and stuff, that's level 3 of that, and what I've just shown you of those level 3 items probably aren't dissimilar in a way. And that level 3 NRS is, you know, hopefully you'd want most people to have those skills in terms of working in there. Workplaces or dealing with community, with banks, finances, all that sort of stuff, plus just good old shopping and so on and so forth. So level 1 and 2 is not that sophisticated. Level 3 is sort of in the middle. And level 4 and 5 is getting to be a bit more sophisticated. So anybody got any questions? I better turn myself off. Hang on, folks.
Is there much dissension in people you talk to, Dave, about the level?
You mean with sort of colleagues and... other researchers?
Yes, just general discussions you have with people. But are people fairly accepting that it's a fairly representative survey?
I guess the issue is that, you know, this is a test that's testing something. It's not like, I guess, what I believe assessment in the classroom is about, and real assessment where you actually sit down with people and you know, they have other sort of support mechanisms, because we don't actually sit in isolation and sit and undertake a test with no sort of support or we do often have people to talk to and all that sort of stuff. So, but it's certainly a test of something, certainly the researchers behind it, the sort of statistical gurus, say this is obviously a significant measure of people's ability to undertake a range of complex tasks and simple tasks. And they're really looking at not just the bottom end, obviously that's what we focus on, but that, you know, it is somehow representative, and when you look at the results, is certainly telling us something about what people can do and what people can't do. But obviously you get, you know, 2 people, 10 people in a room, then they're going to disagree with what people require in their everyday lives or in their working lives. So, yeah, there'll always be debates, but I guess my argument is this is a snapshot, and it's an indication of what adult skills are in undertaking these sorts of tasks in isolation, and then when you actually translate that into real life, you obviously need to sort of soften and, take into account other factors. Does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks, Dan.
Good. Any other questions before I show you some of the results? Okay, so, what I've got there, and again, if you get the, download the document yourself, you'll get all of these, and there's a state-by-state breakdown. I'm a Victorian, and it's not very... You can't brag about where Victoria sits, but we can say that we sometimes beat Tasmania. The ACT is at the top, the Northern Territory is at the bottom. And Victoria and Tasmania, as they do in school-based surveys, it's very consistent. I've had a look, compared them with the PISA, the age 15 results, and the performance across Australia is very consistent. So Victoria's down the bottom, depending on which actual scale it is. So you can see the results there. I mean, from the prose literacy, it's 46.4, jumps a little bit to document literacy, and I always think the document literacy is... the thing to look at in terms of the sorts of text that people deal with at work and in finance and shopping is often, you know, document literacy. Obviously, because I'm a numeracy person, I'm very interested in the numeracy scale. And then, as I said, the health literacy scale jumps up to 59% of the adult population were at levels 1 and 2. So you've seen some of the level one and two items, and so you've seen the level three. So these people weren't able to solve some of those level three items that you were looking at. I think the health literacy is really interesting, given that our focus on people being able to look after themselves and an aging population, and again we'll look at some results in terms of age in a minute, but it is pretty staggering. I mean, I've been interviewed probably on the radio, I don't know, 20 times since the results came out, and the problem with the media is they just want to get stuck into teachers and say, how on earth can schools have let adults get through life, get through school without being able to do these sorts of tasks? But the issue to me is that, you know, people are always going to get through it. It's what we're going to do about supporting those adults who have got there. And when we keep talking about, you know, and we only have to look at the 2020 stuff and have a look at what people are expecting people to do, that I think literacy is a big issue. I won't focus on this, but Australia always sits in the middle when we compare it with other countries. Very interesting to look at the Italian results, which you'll see are enormously high number, nearly 50% of the population are at level one. But when you compare that with where they were 10 years ago on IELTS, they've improved some a massive amount. So they're actually pleased, because they've obviously instituted some programs that have actually made a difference. I think the next slide is a really fascinating one. This is a comparison of document literacy in Australia versus New Zealand, our near neighbours. I mean, in Australia, in some ways, we could say this is on document literacy, comparing 96 results to 2006, and you can say, well, we marginally improved in that 10-year period, so there's 2% less people at level one. So that's a positive, and when talking, and I know government people are listening, I've sort of been able to say, well, that's a good sign. Places like Canada and America went backwards, the fact that we've improved is a good thing, and we've got 2% more at the top level, so again, that's important. But when you have a look at what New Zealand did in the same 10-year period in document literacy, they improved by 8%, and they went past Australia, so they were behind us before, and now they're ahead of us. So I think the obvious question to me, which I've, is a nice way of pointing things out to, bureaucrats and ministers and stuff, is, well, maybe we should go and have a look at what New Zealand did in that 10-year period. From anecdotally, I don't know enough detail, but they certainly instituted specific programs, I think targeted at youth and workplace literacy. And it's obviously made a significant difference in document literacy, whereas their change in prose literacy was minimal. So it's obviously, you'd want to have a look at their programs to see actually what's happened and how they made such a difference. But, the government there, it's easy to find out that they instituted a whole range of programs and invested money, that thing called dollars that we don't seem to get in education anymore. Quickly, some other interesting results. There was quite a dramatic improvement in the adults from a non-English speaking background, and especially those people who were recent arrivals. So again, targeted skilled migration has obviously made a difference. And I think if the statisticians or the people who can do all this stuff looked at it, I think that might account for our 2% improvement across the at the lower level. So that's a very positive thing. And this is some analysis I've just started to do. I'm getting better at my Excel spreadsheets. So taking the raw data, if you download the report, you just get numbers, pages and pages of tables with lots of numbers. So I think it's my numeracy hat on again, put it into graphic, tells a much more dramatic story. So this one is comparing years of schooling, and the results they're quite clear in their report, the ABS report. They say virtually every year of schooling, even going on up years at university, every year of education actually improves your literacy skills. It's a direct relationship, and therefore investing in education makes a difference. I guess what I'm interested in here is that with some of the people that I work with and going around talking at TAFE colleges and stuff and workplaces, that a lot of people that we're talking about upskilling and getting them into education, they probably are not very well educated and maybe only have 10 years or less of formal schooling. And once you get to that sort of level of education, then you're getting up to over 70% of that population with that lack of education are at levels 1 and 2 of the survey. So a lot of questions that we can start thinking about are what the implications are for that group of adults that are out there who haven't had a lot of education, and yet we still talk about upskilling and the skill shortage, and a lot of people that we're targeting to try and get into education, I think could be down in the bottom where they're very poor literacy skills. I'm going to my passion, numeracy, and I guess this, of all the results that I've seen, I guess I find this the most staggering. If somebody had have asked me what the gender difference would have been in numeracy, I would have said, like in schools, it would have been 2 or 3% in favour of the males. But here you've got a difference of over 10%. That is, there's over 10% more is about age. So we sort of know that skills do drop off. There is the, if you don't use it, you lose it. So you can see they're quite dramatically, however, in your 40s you start to lose it. But also that will be also related to the fact that older adults won't have had as much education. There's a whole complex things in there. Yes, I can see the question from Kathy. I'll stop in a minute and then we can go back to the questions. But I think the other interesting thing there was that the ones with the highest, the ones that perform the highest, are basically those who are in their early 20s to their early 30s. So the kids coming out of schools are 15 to 19 year olds down the bottom there. In fact, down there, their skills improve after they leave school. So again, a lot of questions. Why? What's happening in their lives? What are they doing with their English and math skills that they might come away from school with? So I think, a lot of this is, to me, just poses a whole pile of questions. That's been cut off a bit, hasn't it? Things that you would expect, employment makes a difference. If you're employed, your literacy skills are higher. People with lower literacy levels were less likely to participate in sort of formal learning in the last 12 months. I'll quickly go through a couple of these. One of the really fascinating things was that, fascinating, sad, and obviously it's not a causal relationship, but each level that you go up, the income changes dramatically. So there was a difference of $205 per week difference between people who were assessed at level 1 with those who were assessed at level 2. That's, if you think of $205 a week, that's a huge amount of money. Just because your literacy levels have been assessed at a higher level, but it's telling us something about how literacy skills are valued and the sorts of jobs that we give people. So there's some pretty dramatic, and the social implications for all of that are enormous, really. So hopefully that's some of the startling results. So now I can go back to the questions. So yeah, so I can see Stephanie now said, geez. So I think, if I go back. So Kathy, you asked, do we know what percentage of Australians have tertiary education? In the latest Literacy Link, there was an article by somebody from the New Zealand ministry, who of course can't be political because he's a bureaucrat, but if you actually try and find the Literacy Link article, he, in his analysis, just put some tables in there about completion rates of school, and we're way behind countries like New Zealand, Canada, or America. So I think probably when you compare ourselves with other OECD countries, one, we know we don't spend as much money, and secondly, I don't think we have that sort of history that other countries do. So I think, you can start to look at that whole issue of completion of education and participation in education. So I don't actually know the percentage you have tertiary education, but if you look at the Literacy Link article, you'll see some interesting information. And obviously the reference that information came from is some OECD publications called At a Glance or something off the top of my head. I've been meaning to go and find those documents because they obviously do all those sorts of educational comparisons. Any other questions that I've missed? Oh, people can talk now because I've turned my mic off. Yes, Stephanie, I can just email me and I can send you a summary of the results and also some other. I've got some other sort of papers that I've been or presentations I've been giving, and I'm happy to send those off to people. Okay, and my email address is quite simple. It's probably easier to do it at CAE because it's a simple email address. It's just DaveT, D-A-V-E-T, at cae.edu.au.
The health and problem-solving literacy scales had a much higher percentage of people below level 3, Dave. Have you had much discussion about that sort of thing with other people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the health literacy is a really important issue. If you combine the stats from the health literacy with the age results and then with what we know about the aging population and the fact that we're all expected to look after ourselves these days, I mean, I think the consequences in terms of health and people look after themselves, the information that people are given in terms of their health and their medication, the implications are dramatic, and I think that's why, like, the ACAL sort of approach about, you know, lifelong and life-wide learning, this isn't just something that's about education and training, it's actually about health and welfare, about the whole health system, social support, and, you know, when you start to look at these results, it's how do we communicate information to people and what we expect them to do with the complicated, documents that we all seem to have to deal with these days. So the consequences are just huge when you look at, you know, even if we want to argue whether it's, you know, another 10% less if we took into account other sort of factors about the testing, it's still, whether it's, you know, nearly 50% or 40% or whatever, it's just dramatic numbers.
Dave, could you just clarify me the difference between prose literacy and document literacy? What were the sorts of documents that were used in the testing?
I guess the easiest thing is to probably think of the document literacy, which are fundamentally tables and charts. I mean, you know, bus time tables, you know, graphs and charts, which, you know, I would argue overlaps with the numeracy as well. So it's really that sort of when the structure of the document is in a table or a graph or a chart, then it's considered to be document literacy. Whereas prose literacy would be, you know, letters in the newspaper, articles in the newspaper, letters to the editor, those sorts of things. So prose, as in it's sort of, you know, script, not in a structured, you know, almost diagrammatic type form. That makes sense.
Or something like a tenancy agreement or, you know, a mortgage document. Would they be expected to? Where would they fit in?
Yeah, they'd be. It probably depends partly on the question, what sort of information that they're trying to, get out of the text. But yes, they'd be probably on the side of the document literacy. But, you know, the results between document literacy and prose literacy, they behave very similarly. The document literacy is a little bit harder. Okay, Kathy, who has decided what is a level 1 and level 5 document? I mean, I guess that's. All of these items are trialed and tested beyond belief. Like in the numeracy scale, we had a feasibility study first and then a pilot study. So the items are tested, and we tested them first of all on about 100 or so people in America just to see how they would react. We got feedback from the test takers to see whether they thought it was completely irrelevant or boring and all that sort of stuff. And then it had to be formally tested in two countries, one being a non-English speaking country. So the same happens with literacy. So the items are tested on a range of, you know, quite big samples of, I think it was 200 to 300 people. And those results are analysed. And the statistics rates the items. It's so it's sort of like the analysis produces the difficulty level. The interesting thing to me was that there also has to be a scheme that sits behind this whereby us in numeracy and the same in literacy, you actually have to be able to predict before the item is tested as to whether it's going to be a level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, obviously, your prediction is a guesstimate based on what we call a complexity scheme. And that sort of information that sits, I guess what I also find about this is that it isn't just the results and the test items, it's actually about the development of the framework. There's a 300 or 400 page document that sits behind the test that explains how and why one particular task, the stimulus text and the question, what makes that a level 5 compared to a level 4 compared to a level 3. So you have to be able to justify that, and that all sits behind the actual results. So there's a lot of research that sits behind it, not just in the actual sort of items. Does that sort of help a bit? So, Kathy, I'm not sure what the flesh scale is, but I'm sure Erwin Kirsch and Peter Mosenthal, who developed all of the stuff behind this, would sort of be aware of all of those sorts of things. But certainly they have scales that they're rated against. Yeah, I mean, the good thing about all of this stuff is that it's free. Again, if you email me, I can give you references to all of the background theoretical papers, all of the publications that came out of the first International Adult Literacy Survey and now this survey are either downloadable from free, the Australian stuff, but the Australian are just the results of the Australian survey. All the theoretical stuff has been published by Statistics Canada, I can give you the references to those. In fact, if I send you some of my PowerPoint displays, and probably I won't talk about this because I think we've probably gone for long enough, but, you know, I'll send this through. But, I mean, you know, as we've been talking about, there are limitations to the survey. It's a sit-down test that's really a test of people's reading abilities as well as interpreting. But to me, it sort of gives some really important information. I mean, I've spoken a few times now at some PD sessions for vocational vet teachers in TAFE colleges, working with sort of plumbers, electrician in horticulture and dairy and you know, carpentry and you name it, and these tradies sit there and you show them this and I say, you know, how many of your students are only done, you know, years up to 10, year 10 or less, and they all say, well, most of them. And I say, well, you know, when you give them that training manual and they're sitting there trying to read it and you're hoping that they're going to work through it by themselves because they all sort of seem to believe in individualised learning, I said, you know, the chances are that, you know, 7 out of 10 of your kids sitting there can't read what you've given to them, and they're not trained, they're not supported to know how to cope with students who are sitting in their classroom. So, I mean, that's just one example of, I think, you know, this sort of data can be used to sort of support why language literacy and numeracy are such important core skills and need to be addressed. So, any more questions, folks? And it's stunned silence, I think.
I was wondering when the next survey would be done, and also what sort of political response has happened since its release.
Ah, yes, good questions. I mean, ACAL certainly was proactive and put out some press releases, and as I said, I've been interviewed probably a good 20 times, usually by ABC Radio, of course. And once we actually managed, or ABC, it wasn't me, it was ABC, managed to get Julia Gillard to respond. Her response basically was, well, what can you expect after 10 years of the Howard government? So from my perspective, it's a cop-out, rather than saying we're going to, you know, invest in it or whatever. And it seems to me that the only response have been knee-jerk reaction responses with, you know, short-term programs rather than any ongoing program. So from my perspective, Victoria, again, has possibly initiated a very small program as a result of the ALS results coming out, but nothing substantial. And it seems to me that ABS are very, very positive about people using the results, and I think they are still planning a conference about it next year. So it seems to me it's a long-term argument that we've got to keep in the front of people. people did suggest that I should apply to go to the 2020, which I did, but of course I didn't get in, because it seems to me that this underpins, you know, productivity and all of that. My understanding is that the reference group for the All Survey, which I was on, my understanding was the Productivity Commission were going to do an analysis like the Canadian government had done, or Statistics Canada did for the Canadian government, which proved that investing in upskilling adults at the lowest level, level one, and in particular women at level one, you're a 1% improvement, if I think I'm getting the stats right, a 1% improvement at level one produced a 1.5% increase in the GDP. So I'm hoping that that's the sort of language that governments will listen to. If you only have to look at, you know, what the topics were for the 2020 summit, that's the sort of language that I think we need to talk to government and bureaucrats. And if the Productivity Commission do that sort of analysis and say this is what needs to happen, then it might happen. But I think we just need to try and keep in their faces and hope somebody eventually listens.
There's stunned silence out there, Dave. I'm sure everybody's as amazed by the results as I am sitting here. Are there any further questions that anybody would like to ask before we close Dave's presentation? If not, you might like to give Dave a smiley face and say thank you very much. We can't clap in the Literacy Live room, but we can show him a smiley face and say thank you very much. Before you all go, thank you very much, Dave, on behalf of everybody. It was you're a great presenter, and you give us the facts in very simple language, and you make it really explicit in terms of telling us what are the needs and results and where we need to go from here. So thank you again on behalf of ACEL. If I could take this opportunity to promote the next two sessions coming up. The next session's on the 7th of May, which is a Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And we have Carol Oliver, who's going to come in and talk to you about mobile learning. So if that's one of your interests, or you're not sure about it but would like to know more, please come to the session. We've also got Heidi Sprigg-Wrigley from the ACEL conference from last year in New Zealand. She's going to do a presentation on the 13th of May at 8:30 p.m. It's a little bit later than normal, but that's so that we can tee up with New Mexico time, and she'll just get up bright and early at 6 a.m., I think, to meet us in the room. So please have a look at the ACEL website for those sessions. There's another session later in the month with Bev Campbell looking at the history of Valbec that's celebrating 30 years this year. And hope you've had a good session, and if you have any more follow-up questions, please don't hesitate to contact Dave, as he's given you his email. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. It's been great to have you on board. See ya.